Welcome once again to an episode of A Pane in the Glass podcast. This is your host, Bill Shearhart, Chartered Professional Coach with Coaches of Canada, coming to you from my home in Grandin, Ontario, on the shore of Lake Huron, in the ancestral land of the Kettle and Stony Point First Nations. The topic today is fifth player. I don't think very much has been written or talked about, especially in terms of perhaps podcast topics on this subject, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this. And as happens so often, I have great people to talk to and invite to the microphone. And so today you're going to hear from Dr. Helen Williams of Australia, Phil Daniel of Windsor, Ontario, and Kim Tuck of Comoka, Ontario. Kim, along with her husband Wayne and father Fred, of course, are the proprietors of my sponsor, Canada Curling Stone. So, since I've never been a fifth player and don't know that much about the background of being a fifth player, let's hear from these experts, Helen, Phil, and lastly, Kim Tuck. So take us right from square one. How did you come to be with the team in this fifth player position?
Okay, so your listeners will already have worked out that I don't have a Canadian or Australian accent. So I'm originally from Scotland and moved to Australia. We have a developing number of players in Australia that play curling, and I've been fortunate to represent Australia several times, both in women's and mixed fours over the years. We were unfortunate to be runner-up in our national curling championships in 2023, and I was really delighted when Team Australia asked if I would join them as their fifth player. Now, I've played a few positions over the years, lead and third and skip. I've never played second competitively, but playing as the fifth player was definitely a new thing for me. And as you know, Bill, when I take something on, I like to do it to a high standard, the best I can. And I thought, right, how can I be the best alternate for Team Australia? And I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll ask Bill, because he's bound to have something either in his, you know, Pane in the Glass podcast or in his previous notes. And I'll just contact him to ask him how I can best prepare. And in fact, you came back to me and said, Helen, that sounds like a great idea for a podcast. Let's do that at a later time. So here we are.
Okay, well, go over to Phil now. Phil, what's your situation when you joined Team Radula?
Yeah, actually, it's quite a long story. For the bulk of my curling career, I've been a skip, and I've been skipping teams since the early 90s. And I first came across Howard Ryla and Chris Fulton in the Ontario Mixed Championship, which was held in Smith Falls near Ottawa. So then a few years later, we came across each other again in the Ontario Men's Provincials in 1998. And our team defeated their team in the semifinal. We advanced to the final and lost to Wayne Madah, who went on to win the Brier and then the World Championship. Following year in 1999, the same three teams were the final three teams in the provincial championships. And at that time, Howard wasn't skipping. It was Rich Moffat who was skipping. Somewhere along the way, since then, they swapped positions. Now Howard is a skip. So we played Wayne Madah in the semifinal, defeated him, advanced to the final against Rich Moffat and Howard, and we lost the final. So they went to the Brier and we did not. We've been playing against each other for, you know, many years since then. I had to step away from curling for a few years because of an illness with my wife, but she's all better now. Got back into it at the senior level and came across Howard and the guys in the Ontario Championships in 2015. We lost to them in the semifinal, and then they lost the final to another gentleman. And then my team made it back to the Ontario Championship in 2018, and where we faced off against Howard and the boys again. But they bested us this time. Some of the guys on my team at that point had too many injuries, so they decided they weren't going to curl anymore. So that was the end of my senior curling career. So I thought. In 2020, just prior to COVID, the lead on the team, Paul Madden, coaches his daughter. And the Ontario Championships were being held in St. Thomas, which is a little town just outside of London, Ontario, which is very close to where I live, which is Windsor, Ontario. And of course, Howard and the boys, they're based out of Ottawa, Ontario. So that's like a 6-hour drive west of Ottawa, where I'm only 2 hours away. So when they learned that Paul was going to have to leave the Ontario Championship to coach his daughter, they reached out to me and asked me if I would be interested in replacing Paul at lead. And of course, right away, I jumped at that opportunity. I've known these guys for a long, long, long time, and you'll never meet four finer gentlemen. So I accepted the invitation, and I've been acting as their fifth player ever since then.
So you've come on to a team in a fifth player situation. So Helen, back to you. What was the conversation like with the team? What was your anticipation, and what was their expectation of you?
So I think Team Australia did that really well. And that was definitely one of the keys. They were really clear about what they wanted from me and what would be required of me. And that really helped with preparation because I was brought on knowing that I would be training with them in Vernon before the event, but that I would not be playing any games unless there was injury or any other reason to bring in the fifth player. So I think it helped having that clarity beforehand and helped me prepare well for what was to come. And I was also really excited to be brought on at halftime in our last game. So that was really exciting.
And we'll make a distinction at this point for the listeners. There is a definite difference between a five-person team and a team with a fifth player. Probably right now, the most high-profile five-person team is that of Jennifer Jones. Is she still around, by the way, this Jennifer Jones person? Yeah. Yes. Big retirement announcement, of course. And now we see the value in that five-person team with Jennifer. Mackenzie Zacharias left the team for other responsibilities, and now with Jen's retirement, the speculation is Mackenzie now going to go back on the team and take over? So, but that's a very different situation, and it's much more common in the Asian countries and some of the European countries, not so common in Canada, and maybe not so common in Scandinavia as well. So, Phil, back to you. When you joined the team in that role, what was your anticipation and their expectations of you?
That was never really much of a discussion. I knew coming in that particular season that I was required to play because Paul had to leave to coach his daughter. So I ended up playing the last five games of the provincial championship, which we ended up winning, which qualified us for the nationals. But unfortunately, that was when COVID hit. So the national championship was canceled. So curling shut down for a period of time. And when it opened back up, you know, when you get to be our age, right? We were late 50s at the time.
Easy so, now, Phil, about the our age thing, okay?
Well, you never know when the next injury is going to occur, right? So after that season, we still all got together regularly having these Zoom meetings just to chit chat and stay close. And the expectation was for me to just continue on if I was interested to be a part of their team. So it was really now a five-man team. And when curling opened up again, one of the players had a injury issue. So they weren't able to start off the season. So I had stepped in and started off the season with them. and continued on playing in the odd cash spiel here and there whenever I was needed. So they were happy to have me there because of my experience as a player and as a competitor against them for many years. So it just kind of was a nice natural fit. And we've stayed together ever since. And, you know, going into any competition, whether it's a provincial competition or the national competition, I have no illusions of, you know, having to get into a game, right? It's not about me. It's about the team. And I've always looked at it as, you know, my goal is to get the team to the end of the week healthy for the playoffs, right? So if that means I play a game on a certain day because we have multiple games that day, I play. And it doesn't really matter which position. I've played every position on the team except skip. It doesn't matter if I get in or not. I'm just happy to get the guys to the end of the week healthy, because as you know, Bill, once the playoffs starts, those guys are deadly.
I guess my next question would be, as the week unfolded, now for Phil and I, the week unfolded with me present, because I was honored to be sitting beside Phil and coaching this team at the World Championships in South Korea. And I can speak certainly for Phil that his support to the team was, my favorite expression was, off the charts. And I'm going to come back to that, but I just want to recognize that to start with. Now, Helen, as the week progressed, were there any times where you realized, oh, good thing I'm here? And I don't know the answer to this, so this really is a fresh question for Helen.
Well, first of all, I would like to start by saying that I was just having a most wonderful time. Like, there were such opportunities both in the training beforehand and during the competition. You know, I really enjoyed all that process, and there was lots to gain from being a fifth player and watching and looking and learning. And Phil, I loved your statement about, you know, my role is really to support the team and get them to the end of the week in a good place. And I spent lots of time and energy making sure that I really could give everyone on the team what they needed to help them best perform. And obviously a lot of that is inherent within the players themselves. And also they were fortunate to have two great coaches, so Barry Westman and Pete Manasvanitongs. But my role, thank goodness I'm here, really just being around for them, taking some of the pressure off them, them knowing that I would go and get their brooms, knew what sort of time we were going to the rink, knew when to just quietly bolster someone's self-confidence if they needed it. I suppose lots of little things that someone perhaps looking from the outside might not notice, but just really getting to know everyone, trying to just look after them so that they were in a good place to play their spot well on the team.
And Phil, in South Korea with the team and with me as the coach, and I want to pose this to both of you. As I said, I kind of know the answer here, because many times the fifth player in a high-performance situation, an international event, let's say, or a national event, the coach will have a relationship with all of the players, and the coach will have a relationship with the team. But the fifth player has a very special relationship with his or her teammates and the coach. And I'll give you a story in my case, and I'm not going to use real names, but this was in a senior worlds, and the lead on the team was struggling. Before we started one of our games, the fifth player came to me and said, "Listen, there was an interesting conversation last night at the hotel." And that's all I'm going to say. But if she hadn't shared that with me, it completely changed the way I coached that next game. I'll just leave it at that. It completely changed the way I coached the next game. And it solved a problem. The elephant was no longer in the living room. And that certainly drove home to me how important it was for somebody to be kind of that in that in-between situation between me as the coach and the team. So Phil, as the week unfolded with you, what occurred?
Well, the big difference at the Worlds compared to the Canadian Championship was we only needed to play one game a day. I wasn't really needed nearly as much as I was during the Nationals, just because there were more games. Like, we played 13 games at our National Championship, right? So I got into three games because guys needed a rest. That wasn't really so much the case at the World Championship, because we only played one game a day until the playoff round. I just made myself available the entire time. My biggest role really was trying to keep track of rocks, right? Knowing what sheet of ice we were going to play next, try to figure out what the other teams, what order they were playing their stones. Now, we did get a chance to practice at the beginning of the week, but it's hard. You know, there were six sheets of ice, and, you know, we're quite old. It's hard to throw a lot of rocks, you know, on six sheets of ice without hurting yourself. So you could only learn so much in that pre-competition practice. So I focused on the sheets that we were going to be playing next, trying to determine what order other teams were playing those rocks. Not that that would tell us much, but it would give us a starting point for that game. You know, if we had Sweden playing next door to us and they were throwing rocks out of order, well, it'd be nice to know, because they're a pretty smart team. That's the approach I used all week. Again, for me, I just wanted to make sure the guys were healthy come playoff time. And, you know, we're a really tight team. The guys are great friends. The guys are smart enough to know, like, if they're not playing well, they don't need anybody to tell them, right? I mean, they're great friends. We had a situation in our semifinal game, Bill, you would have remembered this, where we had a shot to lay 3-1 in the first end of the semifinal, and the rock got burnt halfway down the sheet. It had to be pulled off. So the person who burned the rock felt obviously quite badly. But nobody said anything. Nobody got upset. And the other team ended up, they were sitting, the U.S. was sitting 3 when Howard came up to throw his last draw. And sure enough, he just draws the button nice and casually. So the team is very good. They don't let the highs get too high. They don't let the lows too low. So they're great friends. So if one of the players is struggling, I'm not going to be the one saying, well, maybe I should go in and take his place. That's not the case, right? It's their team. They've been together for 30 some odd years off and on. And the reason I'm going to get into a game is if somebody breaks a leg, you know what I mean? So I'm just so thrilled to be part of that group and to be associated with these gentlemen for forever. Right. It's it really was a dream come true for me.
Now, Helen, we see a difference here with Phil, with the long relationship that he had with the team. How much of a historical relationship did you have with the team?
So, I mean, I've known the Skip for a long time, and the lead in the second had come on some training camps with us previously. So I'd known those two players. And the third player is quite a new player to Australia, so didn't know that person so well. But we spent some time before the comp just getting to know one another a bit. And I think that time we had in Vernon, you know, sharing accommodation together was a good time to get to know the players better. It's definitely a challenge when you don't have the same sort of established relationship that Phil has with his team. But I think having the shared goals to, you know, help Australia do well in comp, I think if everyone's on the same page and that's your goal and your focus, you can work with that and really make the most of all the time you have together, both on ice and off ice, to optimize performance.
What advice would you give if someone came to you and said, hey, a team has asked me to be a fifth player. So if you had, you know, sort of your top three tips to somebody who is invited into the fifth player environment, Phil, we'll go back to you. What would be your top three tips? What would you say to that person?
Well, the most important thing, you know, is you're there to support the team. It isn't about you. It's about the team. And if you're needed, you go in and play the best of your ability. But when you're not playing, there are ways that you can contribute as well. As I mentioned, right, in our provincial championship, it's played in a curling club. So, you know, as a fifth player, you're behind the glass and all that. And you can get up and move around and move.
You're behind a pane in the glass.
Yeah. There you go. So you can move around easily enough behind the glass and mark down the rocks people are throwing, especially if you know you're going to be playing a certain sheet in your next game. That's the best advice I can give. As well, in our provincial championship, you're given time in the evening after all the games are done. You can go out and throw rocks for 30 minutes. So if you know that the two sheets you're playing the next day and the color you're playing, well, those are the rocks that you go out and practice with. So those are two of the things that you can do to really add value to the team. The third thing, again, you know, it's about anything you can do to make sure the team is healthy at the end of the week for the playoffs. Now, whether that's playing the last four ends of a game that you're winning 10-0 or losing 10-0, then you just go do it, right? Whatever, again, especially at our age, right? Any chance you get to reduce the number of slides, the better, right? So,
you know, anything you can keep saying about, you know, about our age.
Yeah.
Helen, well, I did just turn 60. To this, Helen.
That's all right. I'm officially senior now too, so it's all.
Oh, there you go. You know, whatever you can do to get the team to the end of the week healthy. You know,
Helen, what would you say? What would be your top three tips?
I would say most definitely have clear, defined goals for what the event is going to entail, and know what the team want from you, and also so that you have really clear expectations about what your playing role is. Tip number two would be to really look at all the other points where you might get joy yourself from being the fifth that doesn't involve being on ice, because there's so much more, you know, you can learn from a coach sitting again behind the pane in the glass. You can learn so much about team dynamics. You can learn about the routines that teams use beforehand. There's so much apart from actually delivering stones that you can observe and learn from yourself. And the third thing would be just enjoy the experience. You know, being invited to be a fifth player, it's great. You know, not many people get to do that. You're being part of the event that you might not otherwise have been. So there's lots of advantages for a fifth player of taking that invitation and making the most of it for yourself, but mainly for the benefit of the team you're supporting.
And now it brings us full circle to the question that was posed by Helen to me: what would my advice be for a fifth player? And I didn't really have much advice, because it's been my participant observation that it's different with every team. The anticipation and the expectations are different. I'm not sure what I would say, except to make sure, and you've heard it from both Helen and Phil, make sure that the role the team wants you to play is very clear. There's no ambiguity. And then, if I can use the term, just stay in your lane. And if that's what they want you to do, then that's what you do. Christian Krager, who did the episode on the 1% solution when I was in Perth, Scotland with the Danish men's team, it was the first time that I had the fifth player do something that I usually do. And Phil knows this, that when I sit behind the pane in the glass or behind the scoreboard, whatever the environment is, I tend to make game notes. Well, I turned that over to Chris. First time I've ever done that. I said, Chris, you're going to make the game notes. I want the team to get the feedback through your eyes. And it's the first, now, you know, after all those years, it's the first time I had done that. And I will do that again because it was so successful. And of course, you know, much of that credit goes to Chris. What you have both said is extremely valuable. As I indicated at the start of the episode, it's never been talked about very much, the role of the fifth player or a five-person team. And of course, a five-person team is quite different. But the tips that you've given have been great. It was at this point in the conversation with the three of us that Helen decided that she would ask some questions of Phil and me. And so let's hear how that went. Phil, I think Helen has some questions she would like to ask you.
Thank you, Phil, if you don't mind. How do you get the right balance between being an asset to the team rather than a distraction?
Well, my situation with the team is maybe a little more unique than most because we've had such a long-standing friendship for over 30 years. We already kind of knew each other and it was an easy fit for me. So they're such good people. You know, it was always a case of when I come to play or I show up at the rink, it's like, what can I do for you? Right. I can't do enough for them because they're such nice guys, you know, like they're just four fine gentlemen. So I just want to stay out of their way. And, you know, if I'm playing third and Howard is skipping, I'm kind of like playing the game like, okay, Howard, I'm just going to stay out of your way and watch you make everything, you know? So my situation is unique because I've known these guys for so long and it doesn't necessarily, it's not going to play out that way in all situations, but for us, it's very easy. They're such nice guys. I can't do enough to just help them out, carry their bags, whatever. So it's easy for me.
Yep. They sound like great fun to play with.
They are.
Bill, would you have any advice on how fifth players can be an asset rather than a distraction?
Well, and again, I'm going to echo a lot of what you just heard Phil say. You know, the fifth player usually knows the team, and I'll go back to the communications protocol, and you mentioned distractions, and you know how I feel about distractions, because distractions are the great killer of performance. And so the buffer that you create between the team and a special form of distractions, because you probably know best who says what to whom, where, why, how, and when. And if you see somebody going down the wrong path, they're the wrong person to be saying this, they're saying it in the wrong way, they're saying it at the wrong time, they're saying it in the wrong place, you can be the person possibly to step in more quickly than even the coach and certainly any one of the other members of the team. So that, I think you've hit a very key point there. If the fifth player stays alert, and just as that fifth player stayed alert on my behalf with what she said about what happened at the hotel, that can be extremely valuable. You don't have to be on the ice delivering curling rocks to make a difference. And I guess that's what I would say to fifth players. And I've seen fifth players make that difference. And certainly, now I wasn't with you in Kelowna, but I was with Phil. Phil made a difference. There's no question Phil made a difference. And I saw it the same as Christian made a difference with the Danish men's team. So my overriding comment is don't feel that you're an add-on. You're an integral part of the team in this competition. And contribution can make the difference. Absolutely.
Great, thank you. And Phil, one other question. You talked about coming in and relieving your players at a certain point in the game. That's great if it's maybe a planned situation, but how do you prepare yourself physically and mentally to come in a game at short notice?
Well, the nice thing at the Worlds, the fifth player is actually allowed to participate in the pregame practice. So you approach that. We had a very structured practice. So you approach that like, you know, you're going to be going into the game. So you got to figure out your weight. You got to make sure you're limber and all of that. So that's not necessarily true at the Nationals or our Provincials. You don't have that opportunity as a fifth player to actually participate in the practice. But at the world level, you have that opportunity. I always made sure that I had a feel for weight by the time I stepped off that practice ice. And it's easy to Bill has sat with me and we talk about shots all the time. Oh, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that kind of thing? So you got to stay focused. You can't get distracted. You got to stay focused on the game and be involved in the game. It's no different than playing other sports. I played a lot of baseball growing up. And if you weren't in the lineup, you still had to focus on what was going on because you never know, there could be an injury. You got to go up to the plate to bat. And if you don't pay attention to the pitcher, then you don't know what to expect. So my best advice is you just have to stay focused on the game. You got to play each shot with them. And, it's great to have Bill next to me because we could sit there and discuss different possibilities. So by him being there, that allowed me to stay in the game even more because we're actively discussing what's going on.
Yep, great. And I really like what you said about play each shot with them. That was really salient there. Thank you.
It's an active role. It's active in a different fashion, but it's an active role. I think that's a very great illustration by the two of you.
And you can make it be whatever you want it to be as well, right? It's not like there's a playbook out there for the fifth player or, you know, there's no instructions, right? Everybody's going to maybe do it differently, right? So you get out of it what you put into it. So I like to be involved. So I guess why I was so in tune with the game and the strategy and everything else is probably my background as a skip. So I'm always kind of looking at the game from that perspective.
And depending upon that conversation that the teams have had with you, if you're the fifth player and you're talking about, well, what happens if someone, you know, falls, twists an ankle, whatever, I would assume that the team has already discussed, well, you know, if Pete goes down or Sally goes down or whatever, so Helen or Phil, depending upon who goes down, this is the position you're going to play. And that can be very different as well. Now, obviously, if it's during a game, you have to play that position. But going into the next game, it may be a reshuffling of the deck if the team, you know, can't have the regular player once again. And Phil and Helen, I think it's as much a little bit of mental gymnastics as it is anything else, because you have to be prepared for everything.
Yeah, it's funny with our team. Howard isn't the one that actually tells me that I'm going to be playing the next game. It's the person who is injured or needs a rest. He comes to me and says, "Hey, Phil, can you play for me next game?" Howard doesn't know until we go out there for practice that I'm in the game. So it could be lead, it could be second, it could be vice.
And Helen, they never ask me if I would play. And I was devastated. I was being ignored. Okay. All right. Helen, Phil, I want to thank you very much for doing this. This has been great. I've learned a lot listening to you once again. So, Helen, what did you say? What was the temperature in Australia today?
Oh, it's to be hot today, 43 degrees. I think I might be in the pool later.
43? And Phil, you said it was -3. So
yes,
are we on the same planet here? Anyway, on behalf of the listeners, thank you very much for doing this, guys.
My pleasure.
Well, as you can tell, it sounded as though that was the end of the episode. The part with Phil and Helen was recorded a number of weeks ago, several weeks ago, as you might be able to tell. And the Ontario team in the Scotties had as their fifth player from Canada Curling Stone and from one of my great friends in curling, Kim Tuck. So I wasn't going to miss that opportunity. So I contacted Kim and asked her if she would weigh in on her experience with Team Ontario, skipped by Danielle Inglis. And of course, she was very happy to do so. So let's hear from Kim Tuck of Team Ontario 2024's guidance. Kim Tuck of Canada Curling Stone of Kamoka, Ontario. What a pleasure to have you in the podcast. You were the fifth player for Team Ontario at the Scotties in Calgary for Danielle, a friend of both of us. And Danielle's going to do an episode by herself once the curling season ends and all her duties with Curling Canada have taken a pause. So tell us about how you came to be the fifth player and the experiences that you had at the Scotties.
Okay, so first off, thanks for having me on, Bill. It's always great to talk to you. Actually, I had been a fifth for Danielle a few years ago, taking over from one of the gals who got a new job and wasn't able to make provincials. So I had played fifth for her before. And so their provincials was going to be in Dorchester, which is 45 minutes from my house. And they were looking for some extra assistance during that week. So the phone rang and Danielle normally texts me, which is what the joke was, that when the phone rang, I knew exactly what she was calling about. She called to say, you know, we're going to be there for the week. We looked for some extra help. Would you be available to come out and assist us with stuff? And of course, I agreed. It's always great to be helpful and supportive to teams. So yeah, so that's kind of how it all came about.
Now, when you were enlisted, invited, which is the right verb here. So what did they say as to what sort of assistance you could provide and therefore what were you able to provide for them? Anything about curling rocks, I wonder?
Yeah, so I think that's, you know, a bit of a positive that I have with my knowledge on stones. I think during the week in Dorchester, unfortunately, their coach wasn't able to end up making it down. So I think they were looking for a combination of, you know, fifth player with the fifth player duties, but also some coaching things, being there for the timeouts, helping them prep before the game, helping out with the team debriefs, things like that, looking after any kind of behind the scenes things like scheduling, anything with officials or anything like that, which would take any loads off of their minds and allow them to just focus on curling.
So were there any instances during the week of the competition where you had to fulfill those roles to, you know, avoid the distractions? And people who know me know how I feel about distractions. That's the big killer of performance. And I know that in talking with Phil and Helen, that they mentioned exactly the same thing, that you were the buffer between any potential distractions. So what kind of distractions at a Scotties might a team face?
So at the provincial level, with the way Curl Ontario ran it with the men's teams also playing, there was some scheduling issues and a little bit of moving around from ice to ice. They also had a leak in the roof, which caused a bit of a wrench in the schedule, having to move different sheets. So just kind of talking to them a little bit, making sure that, you know, the girls were aware of what the time changes were and things like that that had gone on. At the Scotties, there wasn't too much other than trying to make sure the girls were there for all the things that they needed to be there. As you know, at the Scotties, there's different things that the teams are required to or asked to do outside of just the curling.
Embellish upon that, because I think a lot of people don't realize the, I don't like to say responsibilities, but all of those other little things that are expected of the teams that people sitting at home on their couch don't see. So describe what some of those things are.
Yeah, so the biggest job I had leading into it was working with the coach to develop their schedule for the week. So looking at all the game times, looking at the things like you're talking about in the sense of like they have the up close and personal that they need to do at the Scotties patch. They have the Sanders Merler telethon that they want to be a part of. So that was something we had to put into the schedule. They have our future stars, which come out and they're young juniors from the area. They get to come out during our practice. So arranging that, you know, making sure that they had all the things that they needed for media day, which takes place on the Thursday prior to it. And then making sure the team's prepped for the pre-comp practice, which of course starts on the Friday before. So there's tons of things that the girls ended up having to do in their very first Scotties at the very first weekend. So making sure that we had a schedule laid out that would allow them to be able to check it. And everybody on the team would then know where they needed to be at what time. So that was one of the biggest, you know, things I think I worked on leading into it.
Now, you mentioned the classic phrase, first time. And first time at a national competition can be daunting. So what sort of, without getting into, you know, personal team details, but what were some of the first time challenges that a team, any rookie team would face at a Scotties?
I think their first challenge was getting prepped in the short period of time that we had from provincials to the Scotties. And there's a ton of things that have to go on. We have to deal with uniform sizing. We have to deal with making arrangements, taking flights, booking all those things. Again, then starting to look at the schedule. What does the schedule look like? How do we plan that out? Making sure the girls are all getting practice ice prior to the event. We all went in a couple of days early to make sure there was practice ice available. So those were kind of the first, I think, the most challenging things that they dealt with. Then once you get into the event, I think it's just the intensity of every game. Every game is super important, especially with the format that we went through this year. So just having to deal with, you know, not really having that lull, making sure the girls are getting rested. It's a long week. So that was something that, you know, they had prepped for, but you don't really know until you get there and go through it, you know, kind of what is all involved. They played in the points bet. So I feel like they got a little bit of a feel for what it's like being in an arena with fans. And Danielle's played in different things before, as has Kira. So I think, and Calissa and Cass both. So I think they all pulled kind of on their personal experiences to kind of put it together. But the Scotties is a bit of a different beast. I was fortunate to go once before as an alternate. So once you get there and start into it, even though you've done some things and had some experiences, it's something you don't really, can't really prepare for fully until you get there.
Did you participate in the pre-game practice?
The pre-comp practice? Yeah. So,
well, before each game, the pre-game.
Yeah. So in the pregame, we had set up, that was, again, one of the discussions we had leading into it was how we were going to work that, how we were going to make sure that the girls got as much information out of the ice, out of the rocks, how they got a good feel for things, but also focusing on that last stone draw, which, as you know, is so important these days when it comes down to these events. So I did participate. I held the broom for two of the girls. We basically paired off. Two girls were with me, two girls were with Steve, and then we worked one side of the sheet, and then filling Danielle in, you know, on what the ice would look like it was doing, what the speeds were, and then again, keeping track of the ice over the course of the game and, you know, pointing out anything that I might be noticing or the coach Steve might be noticing to be able to give to the girls the fifth end or in between ends.
Some people don't realize that the day before the competition, and you referred to the pre-comp event, training, practice, whatever you want to call it. So very quickly, what happens for each team the day before the competition starts? What, just describe that pre-competition training, that one day.
Yeah, so all the teams get the opportunity to work across the sheets pre-competition. So that's, you go out and you have 10, I think it's 10 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes. I think it's 10. I can't remember now exactly, per sheet. And so you start on one sheet and then you move across the sheets and gives you the opportunity to kind of get a feel for the ice, kind of see what it's a little bit doing, get a feel for maybe what the rocks are going to be doing, and just kind of get comfortable is basically the point of it.
During the game, were you gathering any data for the team as the game unfolded?
Yes. So I had a few jobs during the game. One of them was, of course, tracking stones. So I would keep track of the stones that the team playing against us was throwing, what order they were doing, if they made any changes throughout the game and when they did that. And if I noticed why they did it, just moving them is one piece of information, but not really knowing why they moved them, you know, that's another really helpful information if you can kind of figure it out. So paying attention to maybe what that stone was doing and why it got moved to where it got moved to. Then, of course, just watching the ice and taking times, keeping track of different paths so that if we happened to get to a point where the girls had to call a timeout and it was a path maybe we hadn't used in a while or one that we had used a lot, that, you know, we'd had the information to be able to relay to them during the timeout. Or if we saw a change in the ice, right? Like if we start to see that the ice is doing, it's slowing down or it's getting quicker in spots, then we can relay that or just reassure by asking them, hey, have you guys noticed that the ice is starting to do this?
And of course, there were two sets of eyes, yours and Coach Steve. So how did you amalgamate what you were watching and what his observations were? How did you kind of work that out between the two?
Steve was definitely more focused on the strategic part of the game. So he was watching what shots were being called. He was tracking the shots that were being called, where the broom was being put. He was tracking the stats, I guess you would say, of how the shot was being made and why it was missed or made. So he was really focused on that portion of it. And then also him and I would, you know, chit chat back and forth. He would be also taking hog to hogs. And then we would be like, hey, did you get 14 on that? And we'd be like, yeah, I got that. Or do you think it's slower here? You know, kind of going back and forth like that. But he was primarily tactical. And I was basically checking, you know, stones and trying to keep track of the ice.
Post game, in the post game meetings, how did that go? And how did you participate in the post game debriefs?
So post-game, I take a bit of a backseat in the sense that Coach Steve runs those and he goes through with the girls, asks them various questions, brings up any kind of things that maybe him and I notice throughout the game. So we might have a chit chat after the game saying, hey, you know, this might be something we want to talk about. And then he would bring that forward to the team. The girls are great. So there's always the open floor for me to interject any of my thoughts, you know, during that debrief. But basically, I take a bit of a backseat and, you know, kind of support Steve and support the girls, you know, depending on what the situation is that we're talking about.
When all is said and done, if you were to give advice to any people like yourself who are put into a fifth player role, what would be your, you know, top three tips to anybody that was going to be a fifth player? What would you say to them?
So my biggest thing, I've been lucky to be a fifth for a few teams at the high level. So I've gained a bit of experience with that. And I think the biggest thing is for me, an advice I could give is to try to be a seamless addition to the team. So you don't want to disrupt what's going on. You don't want to change what's going on. You kind of want to be there when they need you to be there, but they don't really notice you until you're needed, if that makes sense. So just going in and being as seamless as possible. The fifth person also plays several different roles in terms of, it's not always curling related. There's lots of off-ice stuff that you are a part of. So being ready to be needed whenever, whether it's having to make a run to the grocery store to pick something up, or whether it's, you know, somebody has had a rough game and they just need an ear to talk to, and or encouraging the girls after a game if it's a tough loss, or keeping the spirits up when we've played really well. There's lots of off ice stuff that a fifth can be involved into as well. And I always kind of, Steve and I joked that we were kind of like, he was coach and I was like assistant coach. That's kind of like how we worked at it. But you're still a big part of the team. And so I think, you know, any fifth player should always feel that they've asked you for a reason. So not to feel like you shouldn't be involved or give your opinions because they've asked you to join the team. So they're looking for that information.
Before we leave this, you played a game. And how much notice did you have that you were going to be playing, and how did that go?
The girls had actually asked me earlier if I wanted to play a game, and like that day. And they had a lot of their family and friends there, and a lot of people had traveled to watch them play. And while I appreciated them saying, hey, do you want to get in? I felt that I was quite happy where I was sitting behind the board supporting them, my time with Coach Steve. And so I had declined actually going into play. I think it was our very next game. It was the last game of the round robin and for us. And we had gotten up and the girls were like, do you want to go in? And I was like, no, it's okay. It's okay. And they're like, no, you're going in. So in the seventh end, I think it was, or the eighth end, I went in and threw a couple of shots, which was nice. It's always nice. The atmosphere is great. You know, it's always fun to play in an arena in front of fans. And so I was thankful for the girls, you know, letting me get in to throw a couple. So, but that experience of being ready, you know, we had talked prior that if there was an opportunity for me to get in during the week, I would, in order to give the girls a rest, right? It's a long week. So if I can go in and play a couple ends, gives one of them, you know, a couple ends off, that's great. It didn't work out that we were in that situation. So it was nice for me to be able to get in, but being ready all the time when you're sitting on the backboards and you're stiff because it's a bit cold and you're not ready. So just that thought of having to always be mentally prepared that you could have to go into a game if somebody gets hurt or, you know, somebody all of a sudden starts feeling sick. So that's another thing, you know, that a fifth person has to kind of be ready. Like, you have to be ready that you could be called on. And then you have to walk in and throw, you know, a draw to the tee line and haven't thrown any rocks. So that was quite, I did make it. So I was pretty happy about that. But yeah, it's a bit daunting to just walk in and go, okay, now you need to put it on the tee line, your first shot of with two practice slides.
When I think about topics in which you as the listener might be interested, it was quite some time before the idea of doing one on being a fifth player dawned on me. And I want to thank Phil and Helen and Kim for sharing their ideas and their experiences. I hope that if you are involved in a fifth player situation, either as a teammate or a coach or being the fifth player, that you will avail yourself of listening to people who have been there, done that, and have the t-shirt. Well, I see by the clock on the wall that we have pretty much kicked a pretty big hole in an hour again. It's never my intention to give your ears this kind of a workout, but again, I hope you found it useful. So, wherever you are, and of course at this time, now that we're on the